through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Bold take Friday. Get those bold takes ready. I thought mine was fairly bold, Tom. I mean, was it a personal jab at you? Yeah. But I did say Jared Goff would throw 3 interceptions in Sunday Night Football, and I meant it. I said it with my chest.
Do you think he can do that and still win?
That's a great question. I think he can. I don't know why I think that, but it just feels right.
He can.
I've seen so many good suggestions on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. 710-710. Keep those coming in. We are joined right now by Michael Bumpus, host of the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. You can hear him regularly on 710 ESPN Seattle. Also, Bump, there is plenty that we want to talk to you about today, but the first question I have to ask you is obviously the most important one, which is what is your bold take for Bold Take Friday?
Tom and Stacy, how you doing? My bold take for Bold Take Friday, Hawks are on a bye, so I'm looking at the league, and I'm really excited for the Browns versus Steelers game. I think that's going to be a good one, and I think it's one of the best ones on the card this week. So my bold take is Baker Mayfield throws 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, and they beat the Pittsburgh Steelers, establishing themselves as a good team in the NFL.
Yeah, the Browns are one of the deserved. The Browns are one of those teams that people are also really hesitant to say are good. I think it's because, here's the thing, the Browns hurt people before, because not only in like decades past, but they were supposed to be good when we were all on the Browns hype train, and then they didn't end up meeting expectations. Expectations were probably too high. So now I think people are hesitant. They're like, oh, I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't want to buy in again. I don't want to buy into this trend that I bought into last year. But I think that it's deserved. Like, they're pretty solid. That entire division is looking pretty good from the top down. Even, like, the Bengals could beat you at any moment. Really never know.
Yeah, the thing that I like about the Browns is, one, look at their offensive weapons, right? They got Baker Mayfield, Landry, Beckham, Austin. Nick Chubb is down, and they're the number one rushing team in the NFL. Now, Kareem Hunt looks like he can get it done, but it's just going to look a little different. So that's why they got something to prove. They look good on paper. I bought into them last year, then they kind of let me down. So I want them to be a good team, but if they don't get it done, it wouldn't surprise me.
All right, well, speaking of improving overall as a team, the Seahawks defense has been struggling despite the fact that the team is 5-0. They do get some guys back after the bye week. It'll be Jamal Adams, Rasheem Green. It's unclear whether he'll be back in the game against the Arizona Cardinals, but he's coming off the IR. You could get Jordan Brooks back as well. What kind of improvements do you expect to see in the second half, if any?
What kind of improvements? I think it's the same old story. Maybe get after the quarterback, but I'm starting to really just come to terms with who the Seahawks are. And they're a team that's going to get around the quarterback, make them nervous, not quite get there. They're a team that's going to rely on their linebackers to get the passing lanes and the intermediate routes and maybe get the tips and get these guys in the secondary involved. And they have guys on the outside who are going to try not to give up the big play in their corners and Dunbar and Shaquille, but guys who are getting more confident in understanding route combinations and more comfortable. They understand route combinations. They're ball players. They've been there. They've done that. But when you're in that cover 3 scheme where you're just expected to get deep, you have to gamble sometimes when you have to get those picks. You have to believe what you're seeing. I'm seeing this slant. I'm seeing this hitch. I'm going to go get it. So I would hope that they just improve with getting after the quarterback. But I also realize who this team is right now. And if they can continue to cause turnovers, I think the offense will take care of the rest.
I asked this to Dave Wyman yesterday, and I mean, there's no right or wrong answer, but when it comes to those big plays, Bump, a lot of the time, it seems like they're not only big plays, but they're in big spots, right? The third down that kept Thielen out of bounds, the fourth down that allowed them to get the ball back the other night from the Vikings. Like, is there something about being on the field and knowing that it's a big moment that makes you maybe raise your game a little bit, or are these guys even thinking about that?
You know, Tom, that's a good question. I think at this point it just becomes who they are. They definitely realize the big moment. Football is situations, and as a football player, you must be aware of the situations. What do I do in 3rd and 1? What do I do 2nd and long? Offense versus defense, depending on what's going on. Everyone knows the situation. Now it's just do they elevate their game in those situations? And so far, that's what it looks like. I don't think that they just ignore the rest of the game, you know, and just go through blindly and they're just playing football. They realize what situation they're in and they talk about it and they're comfortable with it. So if they can keep showing up in those big time moments, that's going to be great. But Tom, I'm telling you, once or twice this year, this defense is going to have to win a football game for them. There's going to be a day where Russell is off. I don't expect the Hawks to go undefeated. I mean, I've watched too much football. There's going to be off days for this offense. Can this defense do what they did last week and kind of get them going? That second half held the Vikings to 13 points in the first half. Then the second half, after the Will Disley touchdown, causes a couple turnovers, and they're like, okay, offense, you take it from here, and we'll show up later when you really need us.
Right. Like, can they not just wait till the last second to win it? Can they do it throughout the game? Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Looking around at some of these contenders and pretenders, as we did at the top of the show, in the division here, San Francisco, are they done? They got a pretty tough schedule coming up. You ready to write them off just for this year, or do you think they're still in it?
Man, I think they're done. You look at their next games. Rams, Patriots, Seahawks, Green Bay, Saints, Rams, Bills. They could easily lose all of those, maybe win one. I think at this point, they're too far behind. They just got out of the part of their schedule where they could have lost maybe one game, two games, not three, and survive. But when you're dealing with all these injuries, and you got the injuries at the worst part of the season where you could have really just gained the lead or kept up with the pack, and now you get all these injuries and you're facing the toughest part of your schedule, I just don't see it happening for them at all.
Bump, I'm going to veer away from the Seahawks for just a minute. One of my bold takes was that the Jets wouldn't win a single game for the rest of the season, well, which means at all this season. I think it's certainly possible that they do and they get an upset here and there, and it is almost just as hard to go completely winless as it is to go undefeated. Like, it's really not something that happens often. But it could with the Jets. So yeah. I guess the easy conversation is, like, how the heck is Adam Gase still there?
How is he still there? He must have a great relationship with management. They must be on the same page. They must think alike. There's some kind of connection there. And maybe they're not placing all of the responsibility on him as well. When you see a team perform like the Jets have been performing, you have to think that coach is in a good spot with management and the owners and their friends. Or they care about each other, or they care about his philosophy. You know, they drop Bell. You know, maybe this is the start of the Jets really trying to change their identity and get rid of guys. I saw something, an article on ESPN saying Sam Darnold goes to the Indianapolis Colts. I wouldn't be surprised if they moved around. Wow. I mean, if you keep doing the same things, can you expect anything different? I don't think so. He must be in good with management.
Yeah. Definition of insanity. From the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, Bump, I know it's not the current subject, but if you get a chance to talk about it, well, he will, because I'm asking him right now, how are our Cougs going to do this football season?
Man, it's a toss-up. Now, the Cougs, let's be real, right? The Cougs were always kind of behind because we don't get the 4 or 5 stars. You know, we develop, we get guys that a lot of people don't want but have the potential to be great. And now you add that with the pandemic and not being able to prepare. You got Rolo coming in, a new coaching staff. So they're up against a lot of things, especially because they're bringing in a new staff. But the one thing I'll never doubt is just the spirit and the work ethic of a Coug. And I really like what Rolo is doing. He's bringing in an offense that's similar to what Mike Leach had. It's a little different in ways, but it's similar. So there's not going to be too much change going on offense. Things will be familiar. Concepts will be familiar. With that being said, I think that right now we will finish somewhere near the middle of the pack. I think Rolo needs a couple years to really get his guys in there and recruit, and we'll go from there.
Stacey, did you say our Cougs?
That's what the texter said. Our Cougs. I was being.
Oh,
I was staying loyal to the language of the text.
I see. I didn't catch that part. I was like, you went to Washington. What are you saying?
Go Dogs.
Yeah, that would have been crazy.
Okay. It felt wrong to say it, but I was trying to you know, keep it honest.
You know, a lot of teams now are starting to let fans, differing amounts of fans, into their stadiums. Do you think, as it becomes more apparent, that the Seahawks are going to get at least a home game in the playoffs that it'll be too tempting for the Seahawks to resist at least trying to get some fans into that building? What do you think?
I don't think it's going to happen. And honestly, Tom, it has nothing to do with sports. That's another radio station. I just don't see it happening.
Fair point. Looking at some of the other pretenders here. And you pointed out that you think Cleveland is going to beat Pittsburgh. I also think that I think Tampa can beat Green Bay, and I think Tennessee could also lose. Who did I have them losing to? I forget. But do you think it's possible they could come away Seattle as the only undefeated team this weekend?
This weekend. What are we looking at? So we have...
Well, yeah, like I said, Tampa
Tennessee,
Bay over Green Bay. Oh, Kansas City over... was it Kansas City over... I'll check the Tennessee game, but yeah. You said Cleveland over Pittsburgh, so you think they could be the only remaining undefeated?
Yeah, I think they could. I really think they could. And I can say that not really even researching a bunch of those teams, because this is the NFL, man, and those guys get paid on the other side of the ball. Even I tell people all the time, I say, the guy that you yell at because he didn't make the play and jacked up your fantasy score or whatever, he's better than you. He's better than a lot of guys at home as well. He's getting paid. You got to be on point. It's not like college where Alabama can go to Illinois, North Southern, Eastern State, something crazy, right? You know that they're just going to beat up on those guys because of the talent difference. In the NFL, it's really any given Sunday. Anybody could lose. So I could see that going down, definitely. Hawks only team.
By the way, Houston is the team that's playing Tennessee, and they just got their first win there. So Deshaun Watson, certainly possible.
It is possible. We'll see.
Bump, it's hard to talk about the Seahawks this year without talking about two key players on offense. That's Russell Wilson, obviously, and then DK Metcalf. So we've regularly asked you as a former receiver about the little things that DK does well or needs to improve on. When you were thinking about the things that you hoped he would take a step forward with this year, are you seeing some of those?
Out of DK?
Yeah.
Yeah, I am. You know that 4th-and-10 catch he had on that last drive? Russell pretty much just threw it up to DK and said, look, I'm going to give you a shot, because that DB was in great position. But he did something in that route that I haven't seen him do as dramatic. When you're running routes, you want to be dramatic with your movements. You want to do it with conviction. And that's what I'm seeing out of little subtleties when he runs his routes, is that he made a hard jab inside on that corner and made him flinch and take a false step and went around him. Now, he's done that hard jab. That's part of running routes. But there was just more conviction and belief when he did it. And I remember watching the replay, because we can't really see it when we're in the stadium. And I looked at my son. I was watching my son. I go, man, that's conviction right there. He believes in what he's doing. He's getting confident. So little things like that I see. And he has reason to, man. He's one of the best receivers in the NFL right now. And I'm sure he believes that. And it's because he works hard and makes big plays.
Do you think that this offense is good enough? I know you said, like, look, there's going to be a day when the defense is going to need to help win you a game or win you a game. It's just going to happen. Do you think overall this offense is just that good that it's good enough to carry a bad defense, like an objectively bad defense, deep into the postseason?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. And I think we still haven't seen what everything this offense has to offer. We haven't seen a real big game out of a tight end yet. Greg Olsen had a game with 5 catches, but not a dominant performance. Will Dissey just got involved last week, and the run game hasn't even really got going yet. I think against Miami, Carson had 80 yards and 16 carries, I believe. So I believe that they're still going to get better at things, and I think that as long as guys are healthy, you line these guys up every week healthy, I think they're going to have a chance against anybody. And I love what they're doing with the offensive line, rotating guys in. I hope they keep that up, because that one, it gives guys experience there. And two, it gives the OGs like Upati and Brown and whoever else needs it a break from time to time and let these young guys develop. So overall, I think this offense is good enough to do it. But like I mentioned, the defense is going to have to win a game or two.
I am not in any way, shape, or form doubting my man Tyler Lockett, but his stats just over the last 2 games have been down a little, less targets and so forth. What do you think's going on there? Is it just that Metcalf's been open, or any sort of explanation? I know you, as a receiver, probably have your eye on those guys.
Yeah, Tom. I think it's because, one, Metcalf is getting open, and two, it's easier to kind of take away a slot. You have a linebacker that's over him. When you play a too high safety look or even a single high, it's just easier to bracket and reroute a slot receiver. So I think teams are paying attention to Tyler Lockett because he is the thing that kind of keeps things rolling. Metcalf is going to hit you with the big plays, but on the scrambles, on the third downs, the short yardage situations, Lockett is typically the guy. So I think they're paying attention to Lockett, and that's going to open up DK. If you want to take away DK, you got to bring that safety over a bit more and have him kind of cheat to his side, and that will open up Lockett. So eventually I think Lockett's going to get back into this offense. I think the run game's going to keep going. Teams are going to pay a lot of attention to DK because he's making plays, and then Lockett is going to benefit from that.
All right, Bump. One final question from us here. If you have to pick one player on the Seattle Seahawks, just one, that you hope has just a career best performance in what I'm going to call the second half of the season, even though it's about two-thirds of the season, who are you picking?
I got to go Chris Carson. Right. He's had two previous years with 1,000 yards. He's in a contract year. I'm always up for dudes getting their money. And I feel like he's kind of being cheated in this offense because Russell's gone and everyone else is getting the rock when we know he has top five talent. He doesn't have top five numbers right now, but I think he has top five talent. So I want to see him ball out. It'll help the team, and then it'll help him when it's time for him to get his money.
Let Carson cook.
So that's the reason that they're letting Russ cook, because they don't want to pay Carson.
Let Carson cook.
His numbers down.
All right. He is Michael Bumpus. You can hear him on the Seahawks pre- and post-game show every single week. You can also hear him Mondays on the Pete Carroll Show on Danny and Gallant. Go give him a follow at Michael Bumpus 5. Thanks so much, Bump.
Tom, Stacy, see you guys later.
All right. Now, normally, Tom, this is when we would do four down territory. Today, though, since we only have, a few, let's say weeks, mostly days left here, potentially, of postseason football where it features the Astros. We'll see what happens with this upcoming game. I have a conversation I have to have about the Astros. This was inspired by our conversation with Mike Salk. Now, Mike said, you know what? It could be fun if the Astros get to the World Series because they were doubted. Like he said, it could be a time for them to feel vindicated, go to a World Series, prove that they can win without cheating, which they're clearly not able to do right now. And in a way, as annoying as it is for them to suddenly paint themselves as the victim, to kind of prove people right that they could have done it. Here's how I feel about it. I think that the Astros have created a fake straw man. That sounds redundant because a straw man is already like a fake issue or reason that you would create, right? That fake chip on your shoulder that doesn't make sense anymore. Richard Sherman was an expert at this. Richard Sherman is probably going to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He would still tell you that people don't believe he can do things. He would still tell you people are doubting him or doubting his team. And maybe people are doubting, the 49ers right now because of their injuries or because of their record, or because you just have a Super Bowl hangover. But no one is doubting what Richard Sherman can be capable of. But the reason Richard Sherman thinks that is because at one point, a lot of people did. Like, that straw man, that person he has on his shoulder, is from a very real doubt that people had, that football draft experts had about Richard Sherman. That he was in the fifth round, that he wasn't going to be a star, that he only got thrown into a game with the Seahawks because of injury, and he wasn't going to be a starter, and blah, blah, blah. He ends up being one of the best cornerbacks ever in football history. So, is it annoying once in a while when guys that get to his level pretend that people are doubting him? Sure. But it's for good reason. In his mind, he probably hangs on to a lot of those thoughts. In a lot of us, no matter how successful we get in life, we're going to remember the bad things people said about us, especially if it was at a time when that was the majority of what we were hearing. So I'll allow it. What the Astros have done, Tom, is they have created what they think is a straw man of all these doubters that were doubting them, doubting that they could win a World Series without cheating. That is not what people are upset with. There are some people that are doubting that you could be as good without cheating, Part of what made it so frustrating was that you were good enough to win without doing it. You cheated anyway, and then you didn't apologize for it. So now instead, you've painted yourself as the victims here, the people that are being doubted by fans, and you have a chance to prove them wrong. That's not what's happening here. You have created a straw man. You've created a fan, a baseball fan, that entered the 2020 season thinking that Justin Verlander, Jose Altuve, George Springer would be bad. What fan thought that? Legitimately, maybe they didn't think they'd be as good, but what baseball fan did you create in your mind that thought, oh, the Astros are going to be so awful. They don't have any talent. That's not why people were mad at you. You don't get to be mad at people for being upset that you cheated. And so why I feel like the Astros are going to feel vindicated and it'll make me upset is because they're going to get there and feel like they won without apologizing. At the end of the day, you will have gotten away with feeling like you didn't have to apologize. And the straw man you created isn't to help you get there and isn't to build that person on your back to help keep your grind, you know, going in the game. It's to help you get rid of any guilt you feel about cheating. That's what it is.
Yeah. They're confusing being doubted with being rooted against.
Yeah.
Right? There's plenty of people rooting against them, but those people aren't necessarily doubters. And I think they need to be a little bit clear with their meaning there, unless maybe they really just think that that's what it is that people doubt their inherent ability and doubt the talent level that they had, that they would have been able to win a World Series. It's like the kid that makes a cheat sheet and cheats on the test and uses the cheat sheet, but by the time they've made the cheat sheet, they've in essence studied,
yeah,
and they know the information,
right?
So they didn't really have to do it. It's not a question of whether or not we thought the information was in your head. That's not why we're mad. It's just that you went ahead and cheated anyway.
It's almost worse That's knowing that cool. you did it, because now you're just the kid that like could have done it without cheating. And in that weird way, it lets you think that you didn't cheat as badly, that what you did wasn't so bad because you could have done it without cheating, but you cheated. You cheated. You were caught cheating. You need to apologize. I don't care if other teams are doing it. You got caught doing it. And one of the things that makes an apology so difficult that we don't recognize how hard it is to apologize. You aren't guaranteed that when you apologize, that apology will be accepted. That's what makes it so hard. It's what makes it selfless to apologize. You don't get to choose whether or not people accept your apology. That's why it's really difficult to do. So man up and do it. Or women up and do it. Whatever phrase you want to use, do it.
Women up and do it.
Well, I'm just saying, I mean, like, you guys are adults. You're all pro athletes. You're phenomenal athletes. I didn't think you would be bad. Baseball fans didn't think you would be bad. All we wanted was for role models to do something and prove that they could be above it. Then maybe it would be a little easier for me to root for you because you could prove to yourself, too, that you could make it without cheating.
I know we got to run here, but I'll end with this question. If the Astros winning the World Series doesn't vindicate them, and I agree it doesn't, does it prove anything?
It's tough to say in this year. I think that was a great point you made earlier. If this was a regular season, I think you could say it proved that they could have done it without cheating, particularly if they're facing, you know, it's another rematch with the Dodgers or whatever, say that that's what happens.
Yeah.
But, like, I think you could have made that case. And honestly, like, I think they're still a really good team. They have a lot of guys hitting free agency, so who knows what they're going to look like moving forward. But I think it's hard to say that with this season.
Because they got the benefit of the extra playoff spots and so forth.
Yeah. All right. We're going to get back to some of your bold takes. Keep sending those in. I've got a couple saved for you, Tom, that I'm going to read to you. We've also going to go over the contenders and pretenders in the NFC. That's coming up next in the Halftime Show.
It's time for the Halftime Show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The Halftime Show. It's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Welcome back into Tom, Jake, and Stacey. This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. Tom, we opened our show by talking about the contenders and pretenders in the NFC. Now, we had a couple differences, but here's the stuff that we had in common. We all thought that the Dallas Cowboys were, as a whole, like, maybe the contender in the NFC. You thought the Eagles could upset them, but the overall, the NFC East, every team there is pretty much a pretender, right? Easy decision to make. We both felt the Green Bay Packers at 4-0 were contenders. New Orleans at 3-2 contenders. Tampa Bay, Los Angeles, both contenders there. We had a couple disagreements, though. You are not a fan of the Chicago Bears at 4-1, despite the fact that they just beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You think that they aren't really a team to worry about in the NFC?
No, I do. The Bears. I like the Bears.
Oh, okay.
I like the Bears. Because I like their defense. I mean, their quarterback situation is iffy. But if they can hang around long enough, I love Nick Foles, like, in a playoff game. I don't know how many playoff games, but I love them to win one game if they should get there. Khalil Mack, the rest of the crew, I think that they should. With a seventh playoff spot, it just makes this exercise so much easier because telling the difference between like a 10-6 and a 9-7 team potentially is difficult, but between like a 9-7 and a 7-9 or an 8-8, that's a lot easier. So I'll go with Chicago this year.
Yeah, I know there are some people that would look at the Seattle Seahawks at 5-0 and say, "Well, your defense is so bad, you're a lucky team. You're a couple plays away from having one or two wins." But I just don't think you accidentally get to 5-0. I don't think luck gets you to 5-0. It's the same reason that it's hard for me to doubt the Bears. I know that they are the only team really in this group of like legit contenders that don't have a franchise quarterback. They're leaning on Nick Foles, and that situation looks fluid. Trubisky could get sent back out there if Foles, you know, struggles for a few weeks. But I also think that Seattle is just really, really, really good on offense. Really good on offense. And the defense can make big plays. They've at least done that consistently. I think they have room to improve. So I know there are some people that are going to say Seattle is one of those pretenders. I don't buy it. And maybe along that same logic, I think I got to buy Chicago too. I think I've talked myself into that. Where it's like you don't accidentally get to that many wins.
No, you don't. I mean, by the end of the season, certainly, you've earned it. But even at 5-0... if you think that the Seahawks are a pretender to make the playoffs, then you must really think that their defense is terrible. Because they'd have to, what do we say, they'd have to go like 3-8?
It's going to be I'll tell you who thinks they're a pretender. It's going to be some 49ers fans, a few Rams fans, and probably a lot of Green Bay Packers fans that are looking at the Seahawks and saying like, oh, well, you know, you might lose and whatever. I'm not buying it, man. Like, sorry, right now your team's 5-0 and your team isn't. I don't know what to tell you.
They're letting emotion dictate
that.
That's
exactly what it is.
They're not thinking with a straight head.
All right, next up. It is Friday, which means it's time for your bold takes. Now, Tom, why don't you remind me of yours? I thought it was quite bold, Tom. Quite bold.
Quite bold. All right, I think the Jets are going to win a game, finally. They're going to win at Miami because Le'Veon Bell's not there. I think that could somehow inspire Adam Gase to get his act together there. B, guess who the scheduled starting quarterback is? Joseph Flacco. Sam Darnold benched, or kind of. Joe Flacco goes out there. I think the Jets get their first win. I also think that the remaining undefeated teams, all three, could go down this weekend. Green Bay, Pittsburgh, and Tennessee all have a great chance to lose. Seattle is the only the only undefeated team remaining.
Yeah, I think it's just solid, solid, solid. Now, this one has come in since that segment. This bold take is for you, Stacey. Thank you so much. Seattle's defense doesn't allow an offensive touchdown next week. Man, I want to believe it.
For sure.
I want to believe it, Tom. I really, really do. We've also got a couple more about the defense in here. One very, very bold take saying that Snacks Harrison will finish the year with more sacks than Clowney has with Tennessee. Certainly possible right now.
Can I say something about that previous one?
Yes.
The not allowing an offensive touchdown. Would that significantly change your perception of where this defense is headed?
Yes. Absolutely. If they would have improved from Miami, it would have. Because you look at the defensive stats, Miami, you see improvements. Part of it is that Miami didn't attempt any fourth down conversions, but Seattle had been struggling with the bend but don't break was breaking. You were allowing teams to convert on fourth down. You were allowing teams to convert in goal-to-go situations in the red zone. And for the most part, it was between 40 and 50% on third down, which is not good. You do not want to allow another team to convert on anywhere near 40 to 50% of their third down attempts. Against Miami, you saw that go way down, at least. Not in every category, but I agree with Wyman when he was on with us the other day. He was like, it seemed like they took a step forward in Miami and then like didn't stick to it, like didn't commit to it against Minnesota. So that could have been weather. It could have been playing, you know, one of the best running backs, currently the best running back in the NFL. I mean, it could have been a variety of things, right? Yeah, like it could have just been a better team, weather at play. So we'll see what happens with Arizona. It's hard to contain Kyler Murray. I know you really like him too, and he's a guy that it's going to be tough to sack him, to even tackle him. So yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. But I like this take. I like that it's positive. All right, last story here. The Astros have a chance to become just the second team, Curtis, am I right here? The second team ever to bounce back from the deficit that they were in and advance to the World Series. Tom, you were teaming up with Saul Kieran saying you wouldn't mind seeing the Astros back in the World Series as far as entertainment value goes.
Yeah. Look, anytime there's a Game 7, really in any sport, but especially in baseball, I mean, in coming back from 0-3, here's the thing about coming back from 0-3, okay? The Red Sox in 2004, as you said, are the only team to ever pull that off in the history of baseball. But before that, they were also the only team down 0-3 to even force a Game 7, right?
Yeah.
So for the Astros to even do that, they'd only be the second team to do that. So, I mean, that in and of itself would be interesting. I mean, would it... God, I guess you can't ignore the scandal storyline that accompanies this, but at least this series in a vacuum, they will have earned that. Mm-hmm. You know, coming back from 0-3 is coming back from 0-3, and my assumption is that they're not cheating. So will I respect that? Yeah, I will. I will.
All right, March Madness is coming to the Pacific Northwest. We'll tell you when and where next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
This is The Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It's The Timeline on Tom, Jake, and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timelines. We're going to get started with Saints owner Gail Benson. This is actually really scary. So this is from TMZ, thwarted an attempted vehicle theft last weekend. She basically just screamed and yelled at the perp until he fled. She's 73 years old. She was inside her car. Someone in a white Nissan pulled up next to her and then tried to get into her car. And obviously that attempt failed after she was screaming and yelling. But how terrifying is this? You're 73 years old.
I don't care if you're 73 or 37. If somebody gets into your car, and I read through the article. It said that the person did get into the car. I don't know if they had a gun or not. But I think the best part of the story is that she thwarted herself, 73-year-old woman,
yeah,
simply by just yelling at him. Like, she yelled at this person enough so that he got stifled, where he was like, you know what? I'm not doing this. And then he got out of the car.
He was like, it's not worth it.
So it has a good ending. Yeah, it's
just
like,
a hassle at this point. I just don't have the time. I don't have the time for this.
Right.
All right. Also, March Madness is coming to the Pacific Northwest. Climate Pledge Arena, the home of the new Seattle Kraken. And fingers crossed, one day the Seattle Sonics is going to be the site of March Madness, the NCAA basketball tournament, men and women's, coming up here in 2023. It'll be the first and second round site for the D1 women's basketball tournament. And then the site for the same rounds for the men's basketball tournament in 2025.
Now, this is 5 years away, but I have to admit, sports-wise, this is some of the best news that I heard personally all week. As you know, I'm a huge, huge college basketball fan. It's probably my favorite sport. It's at least my favorite postseason sport because I love the tournament so much. Hopefully by 2025, my Indiana Hoosiers will be great again, and maybe the Huskies too. I am absolutely, as soon as humanly possible, I am going to be making sure that I attend those events, because I actually haven't been to a to an NCAA tournament game proper since I was like 11 years old. It was 1990. I definitely will be going to that. I'm fired up.
No, it is. Isn't it weird thinking, this is going to get into depressing territory, you guys. I apologize in advance, but I can't stop thinking about it. It is weird thinking, what if we don't have March Madness again this upcoming season? Because depending on the timeline, the good news is that the timeline for a potential vaccine for COVID seems like that has hastened to where we're now looking at that potentially being the end of this year, early next year. So that's the really good news, because that's light speed in terms of vaccine production. But it also selfishly puts a damper on the college sports seasons continuing, which means, like, okay, are we going to have a normal basketball season? I know that this is the last thing on people's minds, especially if you're not a sports fan. But if you're a sports fan, you're like, man, are we not going to see March Madness until like 2022?
Yeah, I hope they have some kind of a season. The good news with the tournament is that you could do a bubble for that. Probably even easier than you could for the NBA. I know it's a lot of teams, but they have a semi-bubble system anyway, because so many of the games are played in the same cities, right? All you have to do is shrink the amount of cities, and then you could probably figure that out. So I hope they do. I mean, they can't lose that tournament 2 years in a row. That tournament makes so much money for the NCAA itself. Forget about the schools, but the NCAA, that's their big moneymaker, so they can't do it two
But see,
years
I'm going to jump into that argument that you hate having, and I apologize in advance, because you hate talking about athletes being compensated. Not because you can't get into the argument, because you feel like it always gets kind of nasty and people get a little political, but I'm going to keep it from going in that direction. I wonder if what makes this difficult to have a bubble with, and this is the same reason I think that the Pac-12 especially hesitated with college football this season, is it is harder, just in a PR sense, to ask college athletes to be in a bubble and restrict themselves and live in this isolated place when they're not being paid the way that pro athletes are. When it's pro athletes, you're like, hey, it's just the playoffs. It's going to be, what, like a couple months, like essentially, you guys are being paid a ton of money. It's a chance at a championship. You're given all these amenities. You're in Disneyland. Like, we know it's not the best situation. You're away from your family. We know that that has some psychological stressors to it. But at the end of the day, it's your career. It's hard for a school to ask that same thing of its athletes when they're not being paid. And I know that people are going to say, well, you get the scholarship and all that. But I'm saying, like, I guarantee you schools are worried about how that might look.
For the basketball, I wouldn't want them playing in a bubble the whole season.
Yeah.
Let me make that clear. And as far as they'd have to figure out another way to do that. But as far as the tournament itself, if we're talking 64 teams, 32 of them are eliminated on the first 2 days. So most of them don't have to worry about being, we'll say, isolated for a month. It's only a weekend. And then, you know, 16 and 8 and so forth. So that problem is probably is solvable, but for the whole season, they'd have to figure something different out.
I'm incredibly selfish and just want it. I know other things are more important, but what can I say? All right. Your boy, Colin Cowherd, Tom, had Mark Sanchez on The Herd, and they talked about Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, that successful marriage that's been happening in Seattle, a conversation we know happens outside of the one that Colin and Mark were having, is could Russell Wilson be successful without Pete Carroll? Could Pete Carroll be successful without Russell Wilson? It's the same thing that happens with Bill Belichick and Brady. When you have a quarterback head coach combo for that long and they are that successful, people wonder, what's the secret sauce? Who's the magical piece here? For Mark Sanchez, he implies it could be Pete Carroll. So cut number one right here, he's asked what the secret sauce is to Russell Wilson's success.
You haven't had the stroke today. You haven't had the, now's the biggest drive and you're great. What do you think that secret sauce is with Russell? Because he does this a lot.
Pete Carroll. I guarantee you. So Russ has that innate ability. Don't get me wrong. That's Russ. He's really molded and adapted himself to be a lot like Pete Carroll. And he had a lot of those qualities anyway. Coach Carroll harped on us that you can't win the game in the first three quarters. You can win it in overtime and in the fourth quarter. That's it. So I don't care what happens before that. We can win this game, and we will win this game, or we're just going to run out of time. So you never lose, right? That's Pete's mentality. And he has this incredible ability to convince you of that. And now Russell is just living out that conviction.
So obviously Mark Sanchez, very familiar with Pete Carroll, presumably less familiar with Russell Wilson. I don't think Russell Wilson necessarily molded any of his mentality after being around Pete Carroll. They seem like both uniquely optimistic and single-minded people.
Yeah, I don't think that... Yeah, this is in Russ's DNA. I mean, to me, this has got to be part of why John Schneider was so big on him when he was at Wisconsin. I think for maybe for the rest of the team, the other players, the other Seahawks, Pete Carroll affects their thinking in a big way. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, guys, I know we're down 12 points here, 13 points, and there's only, you know, 8 minutes to go or whatever. We're going to win this game. Like, Russ knows that inherently. He knows that about the team, and he knows it about himself. It doesn't hurt that he has Pete Carroll. I mean, they're a perfect match in that sense. But I think Pete Carroll affects the rest of the team in that way more than he affects Russell Wilson, because Russ doesn't need it like the other players might.
I do like that Pete Carroll has adapted, it seems, especially of late, to Russell Wilson's strengths and recognized that Russell Wilson is the strength of his team. I think that Pete Carroll gets overlooked as a coach because Russell Wilson is so great. So I'm saying I agree with you. I think that too many people are quick to say Russell Wilson could succeed anywhere. Pete Carroll's lucky to have him. Yeah, like that's true. You are always lucky to have a franchise player, a franchise altering player, or a once in a generation talent, a quarterback. Like, there are not 32 franchise quarterbacks. We know this. Anytime you have one, you're lucky to have him. I think that Pete Carroll has managed to keep this locker room together, keep it cohesive, keep with a pretty consistent mindset over the better part of a decade, which is so incredibly difficult to do, especially when you have some of the same guys in the same locker room. And I feel like it gets overlooked. So I know that that's what you're saying, that like, could Russell Wilson succeed anywhere? Sure. Does it make it easier for Russell Wilson to thrive when he also has great pieces around him? Absolutely. Just like it does for Patrick Mahomes. And you have to give the coach credit for that. All right,
I was just going to say a very quick point here. People had the same conversation about Belichick and Brady, as you said. I don't remember anybody having that conversation about Peyton Manning and Tony Dungy. Like, oh, Peyton Manning could never win without Tony Dungy. Or Tony Dungy could never win without Peyton Manning. Like, or whoever, like, who else did Peyton win with? Gary Kubiak? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't, it's funny how there are some quarterbacks, like, even Drew Brees and Sean Payton. I know that conversation has been had, but perhaps not as much as Russell and Pete or Belichick and Brady or whatever. It's just interesting to see like which coaches and quarterbacks are codependent truly and which ones are not.
Yeah, yeah. It's fascinating. I wouldn't mind getting back to this conversation a little bit later, but first, Tom, we're going to get to some NFL headlines. The Patriots have canceled practice after another positive COVID test, plus Le'Veon Bell lands with a new team. We'll get to that next in NFL headlines.